just, you know, I didn't even look into it until yesterday. I was like, well, that would be really cool if it were good. Let's check. Uh-huh. No, it looks terrible.
Do this. Let's roll for host.
None of us have gone to random.org yet.
I don't even have my browser.
I'm already there.
We started so quickly.
I'm already there.
What have you done, Michael?
All right, I'm hitting generate.
What was that?
Can we edit? Can we start over?
It's Josh's.
No, don't do it.
We can
edit. No, it's
this.
Much better not to edit this.
Okay, I got a 9. That blows, goats.
Random.org is loading. Slowly.
I'm never going to host again.
Your Wi-Fi is terrible.
Get out of my house.
That'd be sweet. I'd just stand outside and we put the mic up to the window there.
It's a little nicer out there, actually.
Can we do 1 to 100?
No.
What? No.
Dude, just come on.
4.
I'm still loading.
What's wrong with your phone?
I don't know, dude.
All right, this is your phone, and because I got there immediately, so don't blame
you
my
lose.
Wi-Fi.
Mike's host.
We have the same phone. All right, go for it.
Oh, all right. You're not,
well,
you're,
I can't
you're forfeiting
unless you're. It's seriously. It is.
Well,
still
hit stop
going.
And
no, there it goes.
There you go. All right. Come on, you have like a 50%, no, 50 something plus percent chance of winning this.
Generate result. Generate 14.
All right.
Am I host?
If that's what if we're going by the numbers.
I didn't listen to what.
Yeah, I got a 9.
You got a 9, you got a 4.
4.
Sweet.
All right.
Sweet. It's all about me this week.
Take it away.
Welcome to the Escort Mission Podcast with Chaz, Mike, and Josh. I am Chaz. Mike, say hello.
Hello.
Josh, say hello.
Hello.
Excellent. Here we are for yet another stunning installment. You'll laugh, you'll cry.
You'll
housekeeping.
Vomit profusely.
You should support the show by going to Amazon.com. and buying stuff via our link. Don't
yes.
just go to Amazon.
Oh, God.
Go to the
God.
Escort Mission first, and then click through our Amazon link and buy stuff there.
Almost led you astray.
We have earned close to $10, I believe.
Oh, sweet.
So we are in the money. And you should also go to theescortmission.com and find all of our social stuff.
You should.
Which is social.
Yes, talk to us, please. Oh, iTunes. Go on iTunes. Rate us, review us, please.
Yes, yes, rate and
that
review
That is a great way to tell
iTunes.
Us how we're doing.
That is excellent. Mike, what's been happening this week?
All right. So, what has been happening this week? I haven't played many games. The last game I played, Josh came over, and Robin, my wife, we all played Botanicula, which is by the same Czech Republic guy who made Machinarium, which was great. Loved it. Did you play that, Charles?
I played a little bit. I did not play the whole thing.
And Josh and I and Robin, we played all the way through. We helped each other part of the time. Other time, we did it on our own. But so, Botanicula is it's highly polished. It's very whimsical. It's very cute. It's got the sound. The audio design is great, like the music and the sound effects. And you know, you've got these little characters that are basically little bugs, and they're kind of in a plant world. And you know, there's no dialogue. Everything is done through pictures, much like Machinarium. And, you know, it's kind of a graphical point-and-click adventure, you know, figure out puzzles, get items, unlock things, get through the story.
It is freaking adorable.
It's adorable.
Would you go so far as to say it's adorable?
Yes.
Yes.
Sweet.
It's really...
There's all these little insects
it's so
and
pleasant.
Stuff that look like it's right on that border.
Does it look
of creepy? But,
oh, okay.
But instead of being actually creepy, it's adorably tiny bit creepy.
And by creepy,
Machinarium
he means,
was sort of
you know,
like
not American.
Machinarium was kind of like that too, right? It was like, you couldn't quite tell if it was going for the gothic, sinister thing or...
Yeah, yeah it rides that line rather well. But I would say that this one is much closer to the adorable, cute side. Almost kitty.
Would you go so far as to say it was totes adorbs?
I would not go that far.
No, so it's adorable, but not quite totes adorbs.
No, it's quite shy of totes adorbs.
Okay. So it's not like Bug's Life level of cuteness.
No, it's just more kind of curiously adorable.
Okay.
Yeah.
The sound effects and the music are a really big part. The music is so great.
Yeah.
The sound effects are really cute. The weird little noises all the creepy little insects mm-hmm. make.
And we played it for a few hours, and it's gotten... it's gone on longer and gotten a little harder than I thought it would be. Like, the first hour of the game is pretty easy and almost feels like this is a little too kiddie on the difficulty scale, but it gets a little more interesting later on. Haven't beat it yet. I've played a couple more hours of the Penny Arcade game. Have not gotten tired of the combat yet, but...
Yet.
Yeah, we'll see. I also played, going back in the catalog, Cosmic Osmo. You guys aware of this game?
I know the name.
So, I think it came out, like, during the reign of, like, you know, the Mac 2E or something.
Wow.
You know, it's black and white. It's a lot like Botanicula in that it's a, you know, screen-based click point adventure. Like, find all the neat, interesting things on the screen that do an animation and make a sound effect.
It's a pixel hunt.
Yeah, it's a pixel hunt. Obviously made in HyperCard. It's very much a HyperCard game.
Uh-huh.
But my wife apparently played it when she was little, like on her dad's computer. And when we were going through the Steam catalog, we were looking actually for Myst and Riven because uh-huh. we wanted to replace our CDs with Steam versions. And she's like, Cosmic Osmo, because it was part of a pack. And she's like, I haven't played that since I was like 8. So we downloaded it and played it. And predictably, she got tired of it in about 2 or 3 minutes.
It's like, oh yeah.
Once the nostalgia wore off, it was like, all right, let's play Myst 4 instead, which we also played. Have you played a lot of the Myst games?
I have played Myst 1 and like parts of Myst 2, but I've never gone any further.
What about you, Josh?
I mostly played all of them all the way through.
Like all the way up to 5, including 5?
Like, I don't know about Uru. What number was Uru?
Uru was side quest.
I don't think it wasn't part of all.
It was an online MMO.
Yeah, it was an MMO.
I probably did all the main ones through 5.
And beat them?
I think so.
Wow,
that's impressive. What happened in 5? You have to remind me.
I really don't remember. I haven't played that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I played them all. Yeah, I like them.
Okay. Well, I've never played through Myst 4, and I think Robin got stuck at some point. So we decided to start a playthrough, and my God, the first puzzle is ridiculous. Like, essentially what you have to do is you have like an old timey, I guess, spectroscope where you have two waves and it's like a flat wave and a flat wave. And you have the ability to change the amplitude, the frequency, and the phase.
Jesus.
And you have to do those both correctly so that the puzzle waveform, like it equals that. So it's like a weird wavy line and you have to take these two flat lines and tweak them to make that. Now, the whole time you're doing this, Atris, the main guy from the Myst series, is giving you hints. He's like, okay, now try the other wave. Okay, now let's do the middle one. Oh no, that was too high. Go back a little. And you'd think that would be super helpful, but in the end, I just ended up like wanting to tear his head off because he says something like every 3 seconds. And it makes you feel dumb at the same time that you know you should just be following his instructions because otherwise it is much harder. Apparently the first version of that puzzle did not have his voice. It was literally just figure out this puzzle, and people thought it was way too hard, so they added his kind
of... So it's like an additive function where you have two waves and you add them both up,
equal
a third?
Yes.
Wow.
I did not have that experience. It must be because you're dumb and bad at games.
This was two of us working at the same time.
That might have been counterproductive, too. Some of those puzzles, like, you know, two people definitely help, but some of them are definitely, like, better done alone, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. But it immediately reminded me of, like, oh, right, Myst. This is what Myst is like.
Right.
But it still looks good, even though, you know, it's like, you're moving through FMV and static.
They're all like pre-rendered. Yeah,
yeah, but it's still Final Fantasy VII rendered or something.
That's why it looks good, because if you pre-render something, you can make it look awesome.
They're not all pre-rendered. The later ones, I don't remember if it's just 5 or 5 and 4.
I think 5 may have went 3D.
Okay, maybe it was like 5 polygonal only. Yeah. It's more like an FPS. You run around and it's live rendered and it looks real good.
The first game, that first Myst, was made in a house in Carlsbad. It was like some dudes and they... Or no, like Mira Mesa. They like rented a house and put a bunch of like Mac Quadras in yep. there and rendered each screen, and each screen took, they had like three of them in a little cluster, and each screen took like, you know, 4 days to render out or something like that. Each one of those little minuscule things.
It's just a series of QuickTime VRs, basically. Yeah. It's kind of interesting how that game has persisted in, like, people still talk about it and play it. You know, generations like come up and discover it, even though it's pretty painful to play through. Like, it's obscure and obtuse. It's exactly the kind of puzzle solving that Josh talked about hating, where you have to take notes and you have to backtrack and you have to like figure out what the puzzle even is sometimes.
Yeah.
And
yeah, to some extent, it's one of those things that I think it doesn't hold up. Like back in the day, I could put up with that because it was the best of its kind, and now I would have less patience for it. Unless I were just nostalgic for it.
Yeah. So that's pretty much all I've played. I watched Josh play a little Terra, and I played a little of the Superstar Dust Delta on the Vita. That's a pretty cool game. I enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. But I don't really have much to say about Terra, and Josh might want to talk about that. So something completely unrelated to gaming. I don't know if I'm probably the only one here, but... I'm always looking for like a good cross-platform way to just keep notes. Mm-hmm. I know there's like a million ways you could possibly do this, but you know, today
across
is like
which platforms?
Yes, exactly. Every digital platform, whether it's a computer or a phone, like I want to be able to make a note on my iPhone and it appear on my iPad and it appear on my Windows machine and it appear on my Mac, or in a web browser, like any client that could possibly exist. I want to look at that set of notes and it'd be easy and it'd be free, hopefully.
Yeah. So Google Docs, Drive?
Google Docs is not super great on the phone. There's
Docs.
No native client, so it's in the browser, and even though it has a mobile layout, it's not perfect.
There's no client for iPhone?
No.
Oh, that's bullshit.
There's no native Gmail client.
Okay, what about Evernote?
I have not tried that. Simple is that free? Are either of those free?
SimpleNote is free and it's dope.
Evernote's free. Now, I think it was pretty decent.
Now, do they do text documents like .txt or do they do like proprietary formats?
I think it's just cloud.
Because,
I don't know.
Because it's very important to me that it is literally like a plain text file.
But can't you just like copy it out? So well, SimpleNote...
But there's no reason to do that if it will just do text files.
The one that I use is called SimpleNote. It's iOS and cloud, so it's web. There is not like a Windows fat client. Mm-hmm. You just go to a web page and it's there. But I use it for like shopping notes and keeping my notes for like the podcast.
I was using Plain Text, which has an iPhone or an iOS client. And yeah, on my computer, I literally just use like Notepad or something. Because if it's a text file, you don't need anything else. But I just found a new one called Nox, N-O-C-S. The best thing about it that I found, the problem with Plain Text is that it literally only synced. It synced over Dropbox. That was important. But it only did one specific folder. Nox does any folder in your Dropbox and does local text files if you needed that. I don't really need that. But the best thing about it is that it does Markdown. I don't know if you've used Markdown formatting or heard of that, but it's a free sort of like RTF, HTML kind of like markup language. So you can mark up your text file using stuff you've probably used like in a chat client to like get bold and underline or headings or stuff. You use very simple text-based symbols to tell it to do HTML, and a client that recognizes Markdown will automatically display it. So I can basically edit this as a text file in this Markdown language, and then when I look at it, it looks like an HTML page, which even does links and does images, and it's like so bare bones and minimal like infrastructure. Cool. And so I love this, and it's free, and there's no ads, so it's basically like the best client I found that works, at least on my iPhone.
Nice. I love finding stuff like that, just like simple, elegant, like exactly what it says it is, nothing else.
Yeah.
So did you say there's no native Gmail client on iPhone?
iOS has... Yeah, Google makes Android, right? So they would never do a...
They could. There's a bunch of other Google apps on iPhone, right?
There's Google Authenticator. That's the only one I'm aware of.
Well, there's the Google app, but it's basically like a shortcut to their services.
The Google app just goes to the web services.
Yeah, it's like a web UI view.
So does that mean you use the web client for Gmail or you use like built-in email?
I use Mail.
And so it doesn't support stars and labels?
It does not support stars and labels or folders or anything. Oh, man. Yeah, it's bullshit. Yeah,
it does support folders. What do you mean it doesn't support folders?
You can
You can put things in a folder, yes. It sees your tags and treats them as a folder.
Right. Yeah. But can you switch the folder of an... Can you mark a message that comes in and put it in a folder?
Yes. If an email comes in, I can say, move this to folder X, and it moves it there.
Okay. Yeah, I don't really use folders that way.
How else would you use a folder?
Well, I just categorize. I mean, I guess I could... So where do you do that? You go into the message, and on the message it says...
Well, yeah, if you just go into mail, like... Yeah. I'm looking at my mailboxes and I'm looking at my Gmail account.
Yeah.
And I see...
No, I know. But how do you move a message into a folder?
So I click on a message and I say here, this little second thing, and it says, where do you want to move this message? And I move it into wherever, junk notes. Yeah.
Cool.
It's not as good as the tags on like the web client, because there's no way to tag it in multiple ways. Like on the iPhone, you have to put it in one tag because it treats the tags as folders. So yeah, it's not perfect. It's not as good.
That sucks.
It's not as good on purpose because Google wants to sell Android phones.
Another thing that sucks,
but it works fine.
Like all your other apps that have to build in support for Dropbox in order to see Dropbox files. Means that you're super locked into Dropbox now. And when another competitor comes out that you find superior or want to switch to, like Box or Google Drive or Microsoft SkyDrive or a million others that are all popular or launching right now, you won't be able to switch to one until every app that you use builds in support to that one, right? Because they all build in the support to Dropbox because it doesn't use a file system. Is that right?
Usually if it has Dropbox support, you go to a page and you say, log into Dropbox, and then it has access to your Dropbox.
Yeah, that sucks.
What's the alternative to doing that?
The alternative is have a file system.
You mean on your phone?
Yeah. Like, you know, phones, OSs have.
Well, but
hiding the file system.
But the whole point of the Dropbox is that it syncs across devices. I don't care about a file system on my phone. I want a file system that's independent of my phone.
Dropbox works on your Mac and on your Windows system, and they have file systems.
But, well, what I'm saying is that why does it matter that my iPhone doesn't have a file system as far as using Dropbox?
For the example that I just stated, you can't switch to an alternative. You're locked into it. Until every other app supports the alternative.
Right. But I guess you're saying, okay, I'll get rid of Dropbox and I'll use a phone that has a file system. Now all those files are on my phone in a file system that I can look through like Windows Explorer, right?
If you want to.
But they're not synced to a network
share.
They are
with the app that you choose, with Box or Dropbox or Google Drive or...
Right. I don't understand, like,
listeners, you are getting you are in the room. This is what it's like hanging out with these two guys on a constant basis.
Okay, well Charles, help me out here. Obviously, I'm missing the point, so what's the point here?
He doesn't understand what I'm saying.
I understand what you're saying. I also understand what Mike is saying. I don't use Dropbox hardly at all. Like, I really only use it to be for show notes when we were starting up, Escort Mission. I used it for that.
That's what I generally use it for.
I use Amazon's Cloud Drive, and I just upload like a little encrypted file that has a few things that I want to, and I upload backups basically. I upload my own set of backups. I have never gotten to the point where I wanted to have like literally just everything synced up into the cloud somewhere. Maybe I'll get there someday, and maybe at that point it'll make sense. I understand what you're saying that. I mean, basically what you're saying is that proprietary services suck, and, if an app has built in, support for a specific proprietary service, then a new one that comes along has, a tough road to climb.
Right.
That's right, yeah.
Right, and I'm saying that
sorry for interrupting you, I think you're saying Dropbox is fine, it's sufficient, it serves my purposes, so it doesn't matter that it's proprietary because it's good.
And it doesn't matter that it's Dropbox, it just matters what the service they're giving me, which is... a central place that syncs everywhere, much like iCloud, for this text file. I want to create a text file once, and it's everywhere.
I know how it works. I'm saying there are six equivalents, and you can't use any of them. Your only option is Dropbox, because the only app...
Well, because it's probably the most popular one, so that's why it makes sense that it's built in. I'm just saying, like, okay, if Dropbox goes away, you're saying I'm fucked.
I'm saying the
right.
Saying the alternative is for your favorite text app, whatever that app thing that you just mentioned was, is to natively support any file syncing service that you might use.
Sure. Yes.
By just looking at an arbitrary folder on the file system instead of
so you're just
directly
saying that,
integrating with Dropbox.
But Josh, I don't necessarily
does
agree
that
with that because you're just saying
how it works on Android.
How does
designate
that work,
a folder on Android, the part of the file system?
Yeah, Dropbox syncs that folder or whatever. Yeah.
Okay, but you're still tied into Dropbox. You're just one level removed.
But if I want to switch to Google Drive or Microsoft Live SkyDrive or Box.net or whatever, then Box.net is now syncing that one folder. And then my third-party app, like the text file app, just looks in that folder.
The service has to support it, but that's one thing as opposed to every app. Yeah, that's better. That's a better way to do it.
Right. Okay, well, if Dropbox goes belly up and I want to change to Box.net, then I sign up with Box.net, copy and paste, and then use an app that uses Box.net. I don't know.
I'm saying apps don't support Box.net.
Okay, hosting, click, chunk, stock.
I just don't see. I don't really see an issue here.
Hosted. Move on.
All right.
Host Banhammer.
The other main thing that I started doing recently is using Spotify. It's pretty cool. We tried to stump it earlier today with a few songs, and it found them all. So it even has pure yellow color of all bands.
Whose band is that?
Yeah, exactly.
Tell us.
Mine. it was mine 5 years ago.
Was it really 5 years ago?
Wow. Yeah. Album came out in 08, but it was done in 07, and we stopped playing in 07. So, wow. Spotify is pretty cool. It is an app that you have to install, which is not as good as being in the browser. But you can play any song you want at any time for free. You do have to listen to some interstitial ads every once in a while. And there is a banner ad in the app itself. But I guess if you just, you know, minimize it, you don't even have to see that. To get it on mobile, you have to pay for a subscription. But for what I want to do with it, which is, you know, basically listen to some music that I don't want to buy and I don't want to even waste my time torrenting, I can just say, hey, start playing, you know, album X by band Y, and bam, it starts playing in a queue, and that's pretty cool. It's not the only thing out there. It's just the one that I had heard that was popular, and I tried it, and it was cool. And
I feel like we're behind the times.
Yeah.
You and me for not having tried Spotify.
It does feel...
I think like the whole U.S. like is out of because if we had listeners in the EU, I'm sure they'd be saying like, where were you 8 years ago when Spotify showed up?
Like, well, yeah, because I think it's only been in America for like a year,
tops. Less than a year. Yeah, they just showed up. But that's been like, you know, Spotify's going to come to America. And they had a couple like abortive attempts where the record industry blocked them. And yeah, there's been like a whole deal getting them to show up here.
So Spotify, pretty cool.
I think it's like an ex-Nokia guy who started Spotify. For whatever that's worth, yeah.
That's there you go. All right, I'm done.
Josh, what's up?
All right, I had jury duty this week. That was actually kind of fun. I actually wanted to get on a jury.
I have never had jury duty.
I have.
Have you
had the
have
summons.
You ever voted?
I have voted. Yes.
Have you ever?
You have to register
a driver's license.
Yeah, yes. No, I've been summoned many times, but I have never gone.
Do you claim that you're busy or financial hardship every time? Or
financial
something?
Hardship because I've never had a job that would pay for me to go. So I just say that. And
right now,
like,
UCSD doesn't pay even one.
They
day?
Do, but I have not been summoned since starting.
Since
it's been several years.
Well, it's going to be imminent then.
Because I'm probably going to vote soon, and then yes, probably.
Yep.
Yep. So I actually kind of want to. I think
it'd
be interesting.
What's it have to do with voting?
They get the list from both DMV and from voting registration lists. Uh-huh.
Okay.
So you're saying there's
not just DMV.
There's an increased likelihood
but he is
after
on
voting?
The DMV list. So why would he be more likely since he votes? It sounded like that's what you both were saying.
They might re-up like since his new address.
Uh-huh.
If he hadn't updated his license with the new address, but
gotcha.
You know, the voting registration will definitely give a current and accurate address.
Right.
And they'll try again. So it was a DUI case, and I got booted off as soon as I got in the box.
You came in drunk, didn't you?
I don't know why.
What's up, Judge? Let's nail this job, Turkey.
I really didn't say much during the interview process, so I think it was purely a demographic thing. And my best guess is because I was a young male. I don't know. They thought I drank or something. I might get a DOI and be lenient, you know, to the defendant.
You probably would. Yeah.
The district attorney kicked me off immediately. So, which means I had an opportunity to play with my Vita a bunch. And so I dug deep into Super Stardust Delta this week for the first time. Instead of just playing it, like I said last week, for 10 or 15 minutes. It's actually super dope. I'm super into it.
It's really fun. Man, yeah.
Once you get all the different controls, you know, under your belt and kind of they become second nature. And then once you get to the challenging part of the bosses and the end of the planets, each planet, you know, now I've gotten through three or so planets. It is super fun. Man, it's so deep. The other thing that I don't think you saw when you glanced at it on Vita is there's a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a black hole button on the PS3 version?
No. So you were saying that there was like a third ability when you talked about
that
it last
time.
Yeah,
that was the extra ability I forgot about because it was like an extra button I just ignored for hours while playing it. And now I'm like, I'm ready for the increased challenge of figuring out every ability I was ignoring. So there's like a turbo and a bomb, an EMP bomb.
Uh-huh.
And there's like a missile, AOE missile thing.
What?
Yep. And there's a black hole thing.
Crazy.
You get to tap on the screen to unlock, so, launch the missiles.
But there are only two core weapons.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So there are three core weapons in HD, but only the dash and the bomb.
Yeah.
That's
and
sad.
The tilt mechanic was cool. So I played a little bit on Josh's Vita, and using the accelerometer, which they could have done, but maybe they just hadn't thought of it.
In the 6-axis.
With the 6-axis on the PS3, is, you know, you tilt the screen and you can peer around the edge of this moon, which is the play field. So,
also, it might not be as necessary on a PS3 because they're rendering it at 1080, and they have
screen is just
the default zoomed out view. Yeah. Or they could do auto camera stuff.
Which it does a lot of.
Probably does some auto camera.
The thing is, I have never really felt like I couldn't see what I needed to, so it's obviously doing some camera movements enough to...
And to some extent, the camera control with the accelerometer on the Vita is a little bit of a hindrance at first, because it's difficult to multitask that.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get good enough... then you can handle that extra layer of depth, and then it's actually really a good extra layer. Anyway, that game rules. I wasn't gonna buy Diablo. I wasn't gonna
yeah,
buy
I'm
Diablo.
I'm kind of surprised you bought it.
It you know, I played the beta. Played a witch doctor and a wizard to level 8, something like that. Beat the Sultan King a couple times. And it's a good game. The characters are very good. The builds are very good. The talents and specs or whatever. But the combat grind and the dungeons I didn't think were going to be super interesting. So the control was not my preferred or ideal control method. But day one, I got a guest pass from a friend, so I could log in and play for free up to the level 13 or whatever again, just like the beta. And as soon as I logged in, I saw, like, on my Blizzard friends list that already existed, that 7 people had already bought it, and it told me what level they were, and told me who was online and who I could play with right now. So I was just like, all right, well, everyone's playing this, and no one is playing Tarot with me. So, you know, except 12-year-old douches. Man, that chat channel is full of bullshit.
Oh my god,
on my
I know.
Server. Man, I don't know. I really
like
want
Barons
to change servers.
World of Warcraft.
I don't know if any other server is better.
Did you connect with the guy that I work with who plays it?
No.
Okay.
No. So in Diablo, it's like people I know that it might be fun to play with friends. So easy. I just clicked buy and then played with several people I know, and it was actually pretty fun. The grouping is fun, but my opinion of the game is generally still similar. The abilities are real fun, but the combat is kind of an annoying grind. And it's not hard enough. It's not challenging enough. I was trying to give myself all these artificial challenges.
Is that just that the people you're playing with don't want to play on the harder difficulty levels?
No, you can't play on the harder difficulty.
Huh?
The way it works is you're on normal.
Uh-huh.
And hard doesn't mean like, hey, make the game a little harder. Like you'd think it should have a setting. That setting doesn't exist. Hard means new game plus. It means after you beat the game all the way through, you get to level like fucking 50 or something, and then you want to start over with the end game gear and end game skills, and you want to just keep grinding. You start over and you put it on hard, and then everything's, you know, scaled to that.
Right.
So you definitely wouldn't be able to put it on hard at level 1.
Right.
It's scaled for level 50
gear. But then there's also a level beyond that, which is like a one-hit kill, right?
Or
like
so that's, kill...
Permadeath, I think, yeah.
Well...
Hardcore?
Ignoring that, that's another whole, like, parallel tier.
Mm-hmm.
But on the same tier, beyond hard, there's another difficulty above that called, like, Nightmare or something like that, which, again, requires basically another whole playthrough. Requires you to be level 60 or 70 or whatever and have even that better gear.
But isn't that game all about multiple playthroughs?
Yeah. Yeah, they want to encourage that. They want people to play indefinitely, like an MMO. It's very much an MMO.
Uh-huh.
They would like people to give them money while exerting no effort, if possible.
Well, they want to. Well, they're not paying monthly, but they will make money
auction house
from the auction house indefinitely from anyone.
And there are two auction houses, right?
Yeah. There's basically the in-game gold auction house and the real live money
dollar bill, y'all auction house.
It begins.
Your parallel is there is the checkbox to put it on hardcore, which means permadeath, roguelike.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really make it more challenging. It just makes it more annoying.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's so hard to die in that game. I give myself all these artificial challenges. I was level 3 and I partied with like a group of 13s, friends that were way ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And I just partied with them for a while figuring this will be fun because I'm underpowered. I still never died, you know? I just leveled faster. I was a little more careful to not get one shot from a big guy or something. I partied with someone who was way underleveled. At the farthest content I've reached, I'm trying to speed through the content, and that was fun because he almost died a bunch of times, and I was a monk, so I got to heal him a bunch of times and just barely escaped death. For him,
I thought the monk was like a DPS class.
Everybody's a DPS class. Everybody's a soloing class. So it's not an MMO in the sense of role-based party mechanics, which is also why it's not interesting.
Does everybody have a heal?
Everybody has a method to be self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
So,
isn't that just potions?
Not everybody has a direct heal, but everybody does get access to potions, which have like a 30-second cooldown or something.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh no kidding!
Oh, that's very different.
That is different. Yeah,
that's very MMO like.
The other Diablos, you could just spam potion. Yeah.
I mean, that's infinite potions is a 10-year-old like outdated concept. That's ridiculous. That would make it. That would make
yeah,
it way.
No, no
way
one played
too
Diablo
easy.
Because of that. That ruined it.
That would make it way way too easy. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, you
absolutely
you,
no challenge.
You moderate that by having a restricted inventory. You can only carry so many potions.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. The potions stack, and you can hold, like, hundreds.
Well, they didn't used to stack.
Did they not?
No. Each slot had a potion.
Oh,
you
yeah,
could
right.
only take
you're
a
right.
maximum
limited
amount.
Limited potions, yeah. So you have to use a portal scroll to go buy potions.
Town portal,
that's just the hassle. That's not really a challenge, though. To go back to town to buy 6 more potions every time.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's fun to play with friends. The class system is really good. The abilities are really interesting, except also another flaw, like the very first primary ability for the monk, the teleport punch, is way better than every other primary ability I've gotten so far. I've gotten like half a dozen or more, and they're all totally inferior to that very first one that you get, at least in my opinion so far. And I think they did that on purpose. I think they rearranged them to maybe to put all the best skills really early for any class so that every class you try seems really awesome.
This could be, I think you have to at least allow for the possibility that this is just that you don't know the game well enough, because I know that you had like Mass Effect multiplayer, you're like, no, this ability has no place and it doesn't mesh well with the other ones. And then you found out like, oh no, it's fucking sweet and actually is really cool. So that might happen.
It's not that the other abilities don't have any potential to have a need. Like if the game were harder, some of those might be better, but at this point it's not hard enough.
Yeah.
And so I'm playing a very, very risky style. Where I'm teleporting into the face, into the middle of groups constantly, and it's the fastest, most offensive way to play. And I'm still not dying, so it's fun.
Yeah.
But why don't they just have a hard mode that's a normal hard mode? Anyway.
Accessibility.
What else? Not much else. Played some more Terra. Played some Botanicula with Mike. That shit is super cute. Facebook IPO,
but
this
not
week.
Totes Adorbs.
That's a lot of money.
Facebook IPO, yes.
I don't really have anything to say.
Yeah,
about
does anybody
that.
Have any stock?
No, I do not day trade. I do not buy individual stocks. I buy mutual funds. But the Facebook IPO was a little interesting in that you'd think that, like, Facebook's value. I don't think they're a $100 billion company, and their IPO strike price was set to reflect a $100 billion valuation, which seems like crazy high. Like, that's more than like some oil companies, like companies that like fucking make things.
It, to me, it seems like they're a week away from a risky, like just drop, like some competitor to just destroy them.
It seems like all their value is in this really deep understanding they have of their users, right? Because they have all this data and information about the demographic details of their users and literally what they like and dislike by what they have clicked, not only on Facebook, like button, but that distributed like button that you find all across the web. Like, you can go around and like, you know, the Coke.com homepage because they have the button there. And so they have all this super rich data, but the problem is that as soon as you start like heavily exploiting that and super targeting ads, then people get pissed off about it and they don't want to deal with that and they leave your service. So like, it's kind of a catch 22 maybe, but you know, somebody could have made the same argument about Google, like with the ads in Gmail and stuff like that. And none of us seem to have a problem with that. So I don't know. It seems like they might have a problem.
I'm not sure how much more valuable that rail specific demographic information is instead of generic.
It's valuable to advertisers.
Yeah, but how valuable?
Very valuable.
I mean,
valuable.
Is it going to multiply their sales, or is it just going to like...
It doesn't multiply their sales, but it multiplies the value of their ad spend. Right, if you're going to spend $1 million on a broadcast TV ad that hits who the fuck knows, right, and maybe you can target it as close as sports fans, right, or, you know, fans of procedural Law and Order type dramas, right, that's as close as you can get. But if you can specifically target, like, people who like to rock climb, and I'm, you know, REI, that's much better, right? So the value of their ad spend is...
Was it GM just like drop their Facebook
GM
ads?
GM did pull out of
because they
Facebook
thought they were not being a good investment. Yeah. So, I mean, that's just one company, but but then they pulled like $10 million worth of money that they were using. So I don't know.
Well, that's a data point.
A company like GM, like, who is a potential GM customer? Like, anyone who might buy a car, which is basically everyone.
Yeah.
Like, how good is very, very specific customer information to GM?
It depends on the car they're if they're selling the Aveo, that's a specific target market that isn't the Impala target market.
It could be just we're more cynical because I don't know, at least I'm more cynical because I don't really see you know, advertisements like in the same way that an advertiser does in terms of the value of it. It's hard for me to see how they value that versus how I value its impact on me.
Right.
Because, like, I mean, I'm guessing that's not because they think I'm going to click on their ad. It's more about the mind space. It's about just putting it in front of me, and even if I only glance at it for half a second, it you know,
so that's
it jump-starts some neurons in my head, even if I never, ever click on a link, ever.
Yeah, that's impressions, but the other thing is that the kind of the, what Facebook is hoping will happen is that they're going to have this advertising market where it's not that you see a banner ad for GM or whatever. It's that one of your friends who liked GM has seen it and then says something about it. Mm-hmm. And you get some information coming from a member of your group of friends, not from GM.
Right.
Right. That's what they're trying to drive. That's how political advertising works at this point, right? Like, they have huge farms of people who every day they're putting out content like... the Obama campaign, I'm sure the Romney campaign have, you know, a farm of dudes who are putting out every day there's something targeted to people who care about don't ask, don't tell, or people targeted to people who care about, you know, Latino issues, right? And that hits on Twitter and Facebook to a set of people who they believe are like key influencers. And then those people, if they can get them to retweet it or share it again, then it spreads out and it doesn't come from the campaign. It comes from one of your friends. And that's like infinitely more valuable.
Sounds pretty devious, too.
Yeah, it's fucking devious. The money that's in advertising. I just, listeners, I just started, you know, a few months ago working at a, or not working at, but sort of contracting for an advertising company. So
you're deep in the pit.
It's crazy. Yeah, there's some crazy dollars that get spent there.
So,
it's
so basically, this is not a $100 billion IPO for a social network. This is a $100 billion IPO for an advertising firm.
The maxim that you should always use is, if it's free, you're the product.
Right, right.
Yeah. So Facebook is not about providing services to
we're
people.
The product of Google.
That is
we're
totally
the product
ancillary.
Of all yeah. of these people. Yeah.
Their customers are advertisers. Facebook's customers are not people who use the network.
Right.
Yep.
Brave new world we're living in, buds.
Yeah.
Yep. Shit is real.
That's about it for me.
All right. I also didn't play all too many games since we talked last, which was midweek. I played some more Eco, and I forgot to mention the last time we talked about Eco that it has camera relative controls, and those are cool, but it also does super cinematic camera sweeps, and those are cool, except that they are fucking crazy making when they are together. Because if you are pressing up to, you know, control your guy and send him forward, and then the camera does an awesome cinematic sweep, but that causes you to change direction, because now your camera relative control up is now like off the edge of a cliff or some shit, that will really drive you crazy.
Did you play Resident Evil? Because that's Resident Evil.
Is it? Is that the tank controls that they talk about?
Well, I don't think that's part of it, but it is where you're pressing up and you're moving forward, and then the camera angle changes to like above and behind your head, and now you're actually moving right.
Yeah.
And if you then let go and press up again, you will go up. You won't continue moving right. But as long as you continue holding down the control as the camera changes, you'll keep going. And yes, it is confusing, but that's like the same kind of thing, right?
I don't think it would be that bad. And I think that games that use camera relative controls at this point have figured out ways to do that. And it's basically modulating your inputs, like averaging out your inputs and saying, like, just taking into account that we're going to do a camera sweep. So they're going to be pressing up. And once they see the sweep, they're going to correct for it. But we shouldn't just send them off the edge of the cliff while that happens. We should, like, take into account the time. You know, I'm sure there's some math involved and whatever.
So similar to the criticism you brought up last week with which buttons to press to lift or climb and such, it's funny that this issue is also an issue that persists even to this day. It's been, you know, somewhat improved in most games, but still kind of exists. It's one of those very hard problems to solve.
Yeah.
Because in any game where you want to move the camera, but you know you have control over your character moving, it could be an issue. And the worst case scenario is when you walk off an edge because they move the camera while you were very close to a ledge.
Yeah.
And so some ways to reduce the pain of that are to make the penalty of death lower, or to make you automatically grab the edge when you accidentally walk off.
Yeah.
Or whatever. But the worst case is when you're jumping through the air while you're traveling through the air if the camera moves.
Yeah.
That's the worst case, because then you can't land on a platform very easily at all. And I think Zelda's in the past have had that problem, or Uncharted even had that, especially the first one. They got better with the later.
Is Uncharted camera relative? It's not character relative? Because Mass Effect is character relative, right? I think it is. Because the camera's moving a lot, but you're always like...
I'm not sure it's relevant. Like, it could be an issue either way, right?
No, because if it's character relative, if you press up and the camera moves, you still go forward.
But if your camera's moving and you have a hard time seeing what is forward...
Yeah, but that's easier to handle than, like, the input that I'm giving is different depending on where the camera is set.
That's true, but I'm saying that it can be...
It could still be
a problem either way.
Some kind of an issue, yeah.
And it was a problem to some extent, even in the Uncharted and even in Tomb Raider and games, you know, come out very, very recently. They're still not perfect with that. They mostly solve the issue by, like, in Uncharted, by making it almost impossible to miss your jump.
Right.
Every jump is, like, almost an auto jump.
Yeah.
There's such a huge window for you to just automatically, like, stick to the landing.
Or Mass Effect, where it's literally impossible to miss a jump, right? Like,
yeah,
if you get the jump icon, you are going to make it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Totally on rails.
Yeah, so anyway, so I'm still liking it. I think I am probably going to end up... This is my sense, based on where I am now, which I think is about, you know, 75%, 80% through the game. I'm probably going to end up putting this in the same category that I put Citizen Kane for films, where like I understand that it's done, it did innovative things, but it not having experienced it at the time and been party to those innovations and gone like, wow, amazing. You know, kind of going back to it, it's not going to hold that, you know, the place in my heart that it does for other people, but, you know, still liking it.
I could see that. I'm curious to see if Colossus does the same thing, or if you somehow, you know, if it surpasses that barrier, or if it even goes on the other side and you hate it for some reason.
What I like,
'cause some people did.
What I like is that they seem to be very thoughtful game designers, right? They're really thinking about things. They're, you know, they're trying to do interesting things, and they're doing them in a way that I like, which is really evocative and really, you know, not story driven, right? We always talk about like, I want a good story, and I think Eco has a good story, but it's all sort of like emergent or discovered. It's not, you know, it's nothing is textual at all.
There's no narrator saying, and then this happened.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's a tiny bit of dialogue, but it's
there's some dialogue.
It's mostly not translated. They have captions for
they have
some
captions,
of it, right?
Yeah, like the queen or whatever. So yeah, that's good. GeForce Grid. Did you guys read about that stuff? The NVIDIA cloud.
Oh yeah.
Cloud.
The
GPU.
New GPU.
No, I don't know what that is.
It's a cloud processing GPU for use by companies like OnLive or
Gaikai.
Which are, they're like the game streaming services.
Mm-hmm.
And so apparently they're doing a bunch of like CPU processes natively on the graphics card, which...
Like encoding into a video stream got way, way faster.
Yeah.
They got the entire encoding into the video stream process down to like 10 milliseconds.
Onto the card. So they reduced it significantly. Basically, they're reducing the latency by like half or more.
The most interesting chart that I saw, a bar graph or whatever, comparing the latency of this new GPU and via a cloud service to a local GPU, like in a console or a PC. And supposedly, the graph said, I don't know how accurate this is, I didn't read in detail about it. The graph said that even for a local system GPU in your PC or Xbox or whatever, to your monitor, the average latency looked like 150 milliseconds because a lot of that was processing of the frames or whatever. And then a lot of it was, I don't know, the display. Some of it was the display, 30 mm-hmm. milliseconds or something for an average LCD or something like that. Anyway, the way that GPU was designed, it wasn't for the minimal latency. And I kind of found that hard to believe. Like all the games that we're used to were used to 150 millisecond latency, but I guess that's plausible because when I've tried something like OnLive
mm-hmm.
and the latency was noticeably irritating, it was like an additional maybe 150 millisecond latency, so it pushed it to 300. And so maybe the barrier between playable and unplayable, or you know, annoying or doable,
noticeable,
and it depends on the game,
or
really
just what
too.
We're used to,
really depends on the genre.
Yeah, like Just Cause 2 is going to be more annoying than like a strategy game where you're
exactly
just like playing a turn.
So they said existing cloud streaming was closer to 300 or something, but with this new technology they were reducing it to be as fast as or faster in terms of latency than a local console, including your internet connection, which seems surprising and
difficult. We'll see how well
and
it's
depends
gonna
work on your ISP, et cetera.
I think they've partnered with Gaikai to kind of roll them out, but I want this because I do not want to spend $2,000 on a gaming PC and then continually upgrade it forever.
Plus, like, you want your extremely light, tiny laptop to be as
your
good
iPad,
a gaming machine.
I totally want
the heavy box that's hot and has terrible battery life.
I'm definitely ready for this technology to work because there's a lot of stuff on PC that I want to play that I just don't ever consider buying because I know it's just going to perform like crap on my laptop's, you know, decent but not great discrete graphics card, you know? So, yeah, that's sweet. So that's all I had to discuss in terms of stuff that happened. I think this week we don't have a specific general topic, but what we are going to do is randomly, we're going to rapid fire some topics, and I've got the random number generator here.
Oh, yeah, let me bring it. Yeah, just so you guys know, when we first started this podcast, you know, we kind of brainstormed ideas for main topics, and occasionally we've chosen from it, but actually most of the time we don't. But we're going to do that now in rapid succession. Yeah. So 1 to 40, peeps.
We're going
to
reach into
it. Okay, 1 to 40. Here we go.
As the host, go for it.
All right.
What's our first one?
Our first topic is number 23.
Okay. Movies based on games. Is it ever really a good idea?
Suck.
Bullshit. They're pretty much terrible,
so,
right?
So The Wizard is a really good movie, which is basically Ninja Gaiden and Super Mario 3.
Game of Thrones. Just came out this week.
Yeah.
And I heard not so good.
Well, I assumed it was going to be terrible, but just, you know, I didn't even look into it until yesterday. I was like, well, that would be really cool if it were good. Let's check. Uh-huh. No, it looks terrible.
Is it just the graphics? Is it, like, what kind of game is it?
The graphics look pretty bad, but decent, like, could be okay. Mm-hmm. When I watch the trailers on Steam, and they make it look like a third-person RPG, like Dragon Age or Mass Effect or something. They make it look pretty awesome, maybe, if all the dialogue were good, if the gameplay were good, which they don't answer any of those questions in the videos.
Yeah.
Then you look at what the actual gameplay is like. It's like strategy overhead. It's board game type.
Oh.
Has nothing to do with that.
Dumb. Does it have anything to do with the story? Is it set in any particular time in the...
It's set in, like, a similar...
No, not similar. It needs to be Westeros.
Well, they got George R.R. Martin, supposedly, to help them write this alternate or parallel story.
Easteros.
I didn't see if it...
That would have been amazing if they just did that. They're like, fuck everyone. You bought the game already.
I didn't see if it was the future, past, or a different continent.
Tyrish, Lannister. Or anything,
but it doesn't seem like the exact same characters, but it does seem like the same world.
I've heard it suggested that they should do the like 300 years ago war, Aegon Targaryen kind of...
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That'd be a good setting.
So I just want to pose a question. So is it obvious why games based on movies are bad?
I don't think it's obvious. No.
Okay.
There's no good reason for it.
Okay, but then why is the trend that they suck?
I do think it's... Well, I don't know if it's obvious, but this is a contributing factor. The fact that there is a time limit. Like, they have to launch concurrently
with the movie or near the movie.
Push, right? So I think that leads to an artificial time constraint that, I mean, games get delayed all the time, and we always applaud, almost exclusively, we applaud developers for doing that. Like,
yeah,
the game's not ready.
BioShock Infinite just got pushed back another year.
It's software when it's done.
Last Guardian got pushed back a year, and then a year, and then a year.
Yeah,
right.
And
as long as it's sweet, then it's worth it.
Yeah, those games are totally going to be sweet when they come out.
And games companies like Valve...
have no date at all. It's right. Just like, we'll give you a date when
it's
done.
Ready. When it's ready. Yeah, Valve and Blizzard have that policy explicitly. Yep. Like, when it's ready.
Well, and id Software started that, really.
Did they?
They started the when it's done.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, definitely. Yeah. So, we always
Duke
like
Nukem.
That.
Duke
Nukem. When it's done, bitches. I'm here to kick ass chew bubblegum.
I wanted to insert, yeah, in general, I agree with you, because some of the movies I have on the list, Double Dragon, Super Mario Brothers, Resident Evil, Silent Hill.
Now, the Resident Evil movies people like
is probably one of the better examples.
Dungeons and Dragons. Remember the Dungeons and Dragons movie?
Right.
Yeah, I didn't actually
watch
that.
Who's the guy who's in that? It was the guy from Transporter, right?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Guy from the Transporter?
Jason Statham?
I think he's in the Dungeons and Dragons movie, yeah.
Wow.
Ouch. So I just wanted to actually say there is one, besides The Wizard, obviously, which is the best movie of all time, there is one game movie that came out that I saw on opening night, and I think much like the Snakes on a Plane mentality was awesome that night, opening night, with like a couple hundred crazy fans who were super pumped.
The FB.
No, that's you guys. No, Mortal Kombat.
Oh my
God. Mortal Kombat movie.
No, okay. See, this is the thing.
I am with that.
I have not seen it since that night, and I'm so scared. I don't want to watch it because I'm going to ruin it.
You saw that opening night in
the
theater?
It was sweet as hell.
That movie was good.
How old were you?
Okay, you know, Snakes on a Plane? Have you tried to watch that since opening night?
No,
that game is shit. That movie is shit.
I understand that experience. I'm trying to ask you about the experience. How old were you?
Whenever 16, it came out, I don't know.
What year was it? 16, like 96.
Yeah, maybe high school or college or
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I remember listening to the shit out of that soundtrack. That like super techno, you know. It's like the worst, like most obvious, four on the floor, straight ahead dance.
Like basically, what it was like a standard issue, like, you know, kung fu movie with the Mortal Kombat skin on it.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, you know, when freaking Liu Kang does his bicycle kick to like knock whoever out, the whole crowd cheered like maniacs. It was awesome. But I'm sure if I watched that again, like, right now, we would just laugh at this. This is not good.
We should have a Mortal Kombat.
We should riff tracks it.
Yeah.
That's what we should do. All right.
I wonder if there is a riff
track. That's all I have to say about that.
All right. Roll again.
Okay. Right.
New roll topic. Again. Fresh there, choice.
Those games are never good. I don't know a good one. 8. And we have to cross these off the list as we do them.
Okay. I don't know. This one might go long, so we're going to have to restrain ourselves. Emulation ethics. Okay, so the ethics of emulation.
Uh-huh. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Just go around and say whether you have and whether you continue to emulate games.
Yes and yes.
Josh?
Yes and periodically.
Okay,
That's a yes.
Yes.
Yes and yes. And okay. What is your standard for whether you will emulate a game? How do you go about it? Do you first look for a legal way to buy the game?
No, I do not do that. I will openly admit that I have dabbled in the emulation world, and by dabbled I mean swum and probably like
you had the R4
died
for the DS,
in the ocean.
Right?
I think the most emulation I've done though in general is old games. Like the Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Game Boy, stuff like that. Like I've got, you know, I've had collections of those games, you know, at the ready to play. I don't really play them that often anymore, honestly. It's not an often pastime, but buying an actual Nintendo, buying those games again, buying the controllers, you know, setting that up, putting them in. Yeah, I mean, basically.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. No one's going to do that.
Technology.
Some people are super into it. I got friends that are super into it.
Yeah. Collecting the NES.
Oh yeah, lots of people are into that.
They pull out their old NES.
Yeah.
They play Mega Man 1 or whatever, you know, Super NES, all the way through again with their RF adapter onto their new TV, or even on an old shitty TV. Sometimes they have a dedicated old.
Well, yeah, you might as well if you're going to go that far, be authentic about it. And that's fine. But yeah, I'm lazy. I like technology. Technology, being able to have all these games, you know, in. You know, 20 megabytes on my hard drive, and the ability to save state and the ability to rewind and fast forward through the game, like if you're trying to get through like dialogue boxes and stuff like that, they've become artifacts to me. Like they're not really this physical object anymore that they were at one point. I mean, I did revere them in that way, but as I got older and lazier and more in love with technology, I don't really want to have all of that hardware, much like having all my movies and music on my computer. I don't want to have a bunch of CDs and a bunch of, you know, boxes. Like, I'm not big on collecting physical objects, so emulation is great.
My standpoint is...
Even though I know it's wrong.
If I want to play a game, I will... If I know that there is a current version available, I will try to procure that version, right? If it's...
Really?
Yeah.
Give us a recent example.
For example, I know that I had a Wii and I was thinking about playing GameCube games, right? And I would look for like N64 games that were available on the Wii App Store. What's it called? The Wii Marketplace?
Whatever. The virtual console.
Virtual console. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would buy them, or I would at least. Try to find them on the virtual console before I would play them on an emulated version. But I would only do that if it was like available on a console or that I had, or like a version for PC, something that I could do, right?
Yeah,
I wouldn't go buy a console that had a legal version, like buy a Vita to play or buy a PSP to play the Final Fantasy. I would just play the emulated version.
Because the 3DS has... quite an elaborate virtual console store for old emulated games, but I don't have one.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I wanted, like a couple weeks ago, I wanted to try Blaster Master because I hadn't played it in over 10 years. And I did own it at one point in time, but like my Legos or whatever, no chance I could find that, or it might be in a closet theoretically still at my parents' house or something. But yeah, so I emulated that, and
I
didn't even look. It, theoretically, it might be on the 3DS shop or something like that,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't feel bad about that because I owned it at one point in time.
And that's, I think that's important because all the, this sort of goes to kind of the way like record labels and movie companies are acting these days. They basically are saying that when you buy a CD or a DVD, a Blu-ray, that you are buying a license to view the film. You are not buying the film itself, right? They're trying to take that standpoint as part of the kind of anti-piracy, their sort of, their viewpoint on piracy. And that has always rung false to me because if that were true, if it was true that I was buying a license to
view
the
that.
Content, I would prefer that if they were straight up about it, but they're not. If it were true that were the case, then if I scratched my disc, I should just have to be able to pay a disc replacement fee of $1 and get another copy of the physical media. But that's
how I treat it.
That's not how it works.
That's how it works for me.
That's how it works for me because at that point I fucking pirate the shit, and yeah. that's how we go.
I bought that album.
Yeah,
I can't find it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I still own the rights to listen to it.
But they don't think that that's okay. They're saying you have a license to use this product, but only one time. Like, what is it? Do I have a license? Did I pay for the license and I can get it on any media I want as many times as I want? Like, no. So,
yeah. So I'm curious, like, do you feel bad about using emulation for a game?
No.
Like, not at all. Like,
That's an interesting. You mean like for the game, like around speedruns?
Like you think it's no. I'm like, if you were to download an emulator and download a game and play it in it, whether you owned it at some point or you currently own it or you never owned it, do you think that's wrong?
If I owned it in the past, no, I don't think it's wrong. I don't have a problem with it.
What if you didn't?
If I didn't, I would feel some sort of flash of guilt. But particularly, so there's another sort of shades of gray type distinction, which is
50 does, shades of gray.
Does perhaps? The company? I'm down in my dungeon getting whipped by a copy of Blaster.
Oh God, I heard the first like couple chapters of that at that Mark Reed's thing that Rob and I went to. God, it's so horrible.
Yeah,
and that's like number one on like the Amazon book charts.
Did you say you just heard it read aloud somewhere?
Yeah, we went to see a blogger who reads stuff like for a living, and he did a book tour.
And he read that.
Someone handed it to him.
A room?
Someone handed it, to like 10 people.
But did he read, like, the sexy parts? I thought, like, the first two chapters
he didn't get to the sexy parts, but he made fun of it the whole time. It was great.
It's so funny the way women deal with the equivalent of porn and the way men do.
Yeah, anyway, let's
I would not read about porn if I could actually watch people fucking, right? Like, what's going on here?
All right, that's not on the list. Come on, let's stay on track here.
No, so I wouldn't feel guilty about it. Or there's a shade of gray distinction, which is, does the company actually have a way to get the money anymore? Like, is there a legal way to purchase it? There are many games where there isn't one. And, like, basically the only way to get the game is to get an emulated version. A lot of games aren't out there on a virtual console or equivalent, store. So for those, I don't really feel any guilt at all. Or yet another like sliver distinction, who's got the rights at this point? Is it the original developer who I would want to give money to and support in order to make games? Or is it just like Nintendo happens to own all the rights to all the NES games and they can monetize them on a virtual console anymore?
So you think about these things, but when it comes down to it, regardless of any of that, you don't feel bad ultimately about emulating something.
I really don't, because basically I don't do it enough to the point where I'm taking money.
So let's say Diablo 3 just came out. You had an ability to, emulate it somehow and not pay for
it. I would
it.
Not do it.
Because it's out and has a way to legally
obtain
acquire it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's and super easy.
I have done that. I think Diablo 3 is not a good example because it's like Battle.net only, and that's why they
that's
did
true.
It.
I was just trying to think of a recent game.
A recent PC game, I did that. I did that while I was in college. I would just like, I want to play this game, but I know I'm never going to buy it. So like, whatever, right? It's like, I'm not happy with that, but I wouldn't do that at this point if there were a legal way to obtain the game.
I've definitely shifted to the methodology, like the mindset that I can afford it now, and I really want to support these developers for making the games that I like. And so I really like giving them money now instead of being really stingy, especially when it's not just supporting the developers that I like, you know, creating the creative content that I appreciate, but also when it's convenient and easy and I like the marketplace, right? And when it's reasonably priced or on sale or, you know, so Steam sales, right. I am a horror
yeah.
for.
Yeah.
I've bought so many games on Steam when they go on sale and never even played them or just, you know, built up a queue of things I've bought in Steam that I eventually get around to trying. When I don't have somebody to play, I look through my Steam library and install like the last dozen things I bought and haven't tried yet. Because A, it's super convenient. It's you know, they make it very, very easy for you to get them, and they're reasonably priced. And
that yeah, is the
I got
key.
To support it's... the developer directly without knowing that all this money went to somebody else.
And I agree with you. I'm the same way. I love Steam. I mean, I just last night bought a couple of games in a pack that I already owned on disc that were sitting right next to the computer, just so I wouldn't have to have the discs, just so I could have it easily. Playable.
The but, genius of Steam is that it's a better product than piracy. It's faster and easier than finding a cracked copy that doesn't have a virus in it or whatever. Right.
And that's yeah. been that's the solution all along, really.
Absolutely.
Is that if you offer
fucking
a good service, they'll pay
great
for it.
Music, record labels, and movie studios just need to look at Steam. Like, it just has to be a better product, it has to be more convenient.
A more extreme example that not a lot of people are doing, but that I have done because I really want to support it, is I bought a Vita. And I started buying games through its market because they basically guaranteed that every game that comes out physically is going to be on the market, downloadable on day one. And it's going to be quite expensive there, and it might not go on sales like Steam, but it's extremely convenient. I get to store them all on the built-in memory card or re-download them if I run out of space,
mm-hmm.
Which is basically matching the pirated convenience on the PSP. Because on the PSP, when you pirated, it was way superior experience. You got to fit like a dozen or two dozen games on there, and you got to just download them and put them on there instead of buying these physical discs that actually made your battery life
UMD,
worse
yeah.
because they were spinning the yeah. disc instead of being able to get them on flash memory. So the Vita, I got it, and I've, like, in my opinion, overpaid for a few things. Because I wanted to support it. I want to support the market, the platform, and what Sony's doing there. And I rebought some things that were like old emulated, like PSP, mm-hmm. like a Final Fantasy IV or something. Because I knew, and that was effing expensive. That was still $30.
Wow.
Paid $30 for that because I knew it was going to Square Enix and to Sony for the marketplace and the console. So that's an extreme case where I still do that because mm-hmm. I really want to support them.
Good on you. All right, next one. Did you have something else to say about that, Mike?
Not without getting into a longer, more complex piracy discussion.
Okay, 13.
Oh, lucky number 13. All right. So do you guys remember arcades? You remember when you used to go to, like, Tilt or, you know, I don't man, I don't even remember.
Nickel City.
Wonderland.
Wonderland,
yeah, for sure.
And you'd play arcade games. And that was like an activity, and I can't remember the last time I really did that.
We should do that.
Like, I mean, okay, I just want to say that I think it's fairly obvious why the only arcades that really exist anymore are like Dave and Buster's that essentially have, you know, cabinets that are custom that you can't really do at home,
right.
Or they have skee ball, or they have racing game. You know, they have stuff that can't really be replicated sitting at home at a console. Like
yeah.
that, those things exist because of that, but. Most people play their games at home, and I think it has obviously a lot to do with consoles are freaking sweet compared to 20 years ago when they weren't and couldn't really give you the same kind of experience. But is there something else I'm missing as to why you guys think they have essentially gone away?
Comfort, like standing versus being in a freaking Lazy Boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Being on the couch is pretty great.
Yeah.
So you hated going into an arcade? You didn't enjoy that activity?
I never got into it as much as some folks back in the day. I mean, I went to Wonderland sometimes, spent a bunch of nickels or whatever playing Super Off-Road. And,
yeah. T-Mac. Did you ever play T-Mac?
Oh, T-Mac.
T-Mac
yes.
was good.
I don't remember T-Mac.
Is it like a futuristic tank game? with kind of a Mortal Kombat type vibe. Like
in an arena, trying to shoot other people.
Bomberman. Man, four-player Bomberman machine. That was, I was super into that.
Bomberman is the best party game.
I think that, I mean, the four-player games with people standing around the front of the arcade, those are still dope. We should still find some of those that are worth playing. And
you mean like The Simpsons or X-Men, like those kinds of games?
Yeah, Simpsons at Pizza Hut.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
But why wouldn't we just play it here?
Turtles in Time.
And on a console.
That doesn't sound fun. I don't know.
What do you mean? That sounds fun.
No.
What about
no,
Castle Crashers? We played Castle Crashers. That was fun.
That's the modern equivalent, right?
Yeah.
Well,
but there is something special about going to an arcade and standing there next to each other.
And yet, in how long have we known each other? I don't think we've ever done that. So obviously, we don't really care about it that much.
Have we ever been to Dave & Buster's together?
No. The last time I went to Dave & Buster's was actually on my, as part of my bachelor party. That was the last time. So that was like six fucking years ago.
That was a long time ago.
All right. So arcades, arcades were great.
Do you miss them?
I really do miss them, but I miss them through the rose-colored glasses of childhood, right?
Yeah.
It's just a nostalgic sense that I have that, like, oh, man, I had fun when I went and did those things. But I also still... What they used to be one of the only ways you could get the social experience of gaming.
Yeah.
Right? And now, especially
with
services...
quarter up on the Street Fighter machine.
Like, talking smack, all that stuff. Now,
even if you had a console, you might not have two controllers or four controllers.
Yeah,
right. And even if you have two controllers, you know, whoever owns the game is going to be way better than the one friend you invite over,
mm-hmm.
who's, you know, going to humor you and just get defeated, demolished at, at Killer Instinct or whatever you've been mastering the 200 hit combos on. Yeah.
So you're saying it kind of leveled the playing field to where everybody had to go to the arcade.
You
to
had
play
to go
it.
To the arcade to get the challenge to play
to get the
other
Xbox
people
Live
that have
played
it a
type
lot,
experience.
Right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Now you can play against the best people at any time.
Yeah, now I don't really like online multiplayer a lot because it is the best of the best of the best,
right.
And they all royally destroy me after playing the game for like an hour.
Well, most modern multiplayer games that do it well are tiered in a fashion that doesn't give you that terrible experience.
Matchmaking.
Yeah. Like StarCraft should only... match you with people that destroy you for one or two matches before.
Interestingly, StarCraft has just added in the most recent patch, they added non-ranked matches, which did not exist before. So you can literally go play a match now that has no bearing whatsoever on your score. And
is that popular?
I think that might actually get me to start playing again because I stopped playing StarCraft 2 because I was getting too stressed out. I actually stopped playing Counter-Strike in college for the same reason because stress is so bad for you. And I realized that I was like sitting down ostensibly to have fun, but putting myself into this heightened level of stress where like I would finish a round of CS or like of a game of StarCraft and be like, super jittery, adrenaline shakes, like win or lose, right? You're in this super heightened attentive state, and that's really bad for you like on a long-term physical basis. And I probably like took a year off my life by playing Counter-Strike in college. I'm not kidding. Like, it's not good for you. It gives you heart disease.
I do remember that that LAN party where you were gone for like 36 hours or something and totally...
Oh, yeah.
Jess was like calling 911. Flip her shit. Yeah. That was awesome.
My girlfriend, Jess.
All right, so arcades, miss them, but we have to agree that we're happy with how things are because playing on your couch is super comfortable.
And tiered difficulty systems are freaking great. Yeah. In Mass Effect multiplayer,
you
play on silver and you get with a bunch of noobs, and you play on gold and you get with a bunch of hardcores.
Do you think we're more social, though, or do you think we're less social now that we're not forced to go to an arcade to meet other people?
It depends, but a lot of people are less social, sure. A lot of people don't want to chat with random strangers on Xbox, etc.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you avoid that? Do you, do you feel
I don't normally put my headset on.
Put a headset on?
Yeah, I don't
very
talk
rarely
to
put a headset on.
I talk to you guys. I talk to people I know, but not random people.
Yep.
I don't really know what I would say to them because I'm there mainly to play the game and not really
so,
chat.
So, playing Mass Effect, guys?
Yeah. Hey, did you see that guy I killed? That was good, right? That's what I was supposed to do, guys. All right,
number 36. This is our fourth mini topic.
Rapid fire. All right.
We'll do five.
Indie versus AAA. What's what's the point, if there is, of making the distinction between those two? Like, why even have the indie term? Like, what value does that have? Or calling them AAA, like, why do we even care?
The budget's relevant. The price point is relevant to the value that you expect.
So are you saying that an indie game could never charge $60 for a game? Like, no one would ever take that seriously?
No, but it would have to be... I mean, that is interesting, because I can't think of an example. But it would have to provide a really, really thorough experience.
Would you never play
just length? Is it just length of time played?
I think a lot of people use that as the metric, yeah.
But, like, we played Fez for much longer. I think even you, Josh, played Fez for longer than, like... I mean, I think the Call of Duty single-player campaign is, like, 6 hours or something, right?
I didn't play Call of Duty for 6 hours. I played it for 50 or...
Right, 80. If you play a bunch of multiplayer, yeah.
And I think... I mean, that's why...
But there are... So, for example, forget Call of Duty, whose players suck.
Yeah,
We've got to mention that. There are single-player games that don't even include multiplayer components that are AAA $60 titles or, you know, whatever. They're $60 titles.
Fallout and Skyrim.
Well, no, I'm talking about games that are shorter than, for example, Fez, right?
We
maybe played 15 hours of Fez, and there are many 8-hour single-player games out there.
I think the short ones tend to get bad reviews.
Yeah.
Well, I was just saying, like, would you pay $60 for Braid?
And they tend to not sell at full price for as long. You know, they drop very, very fast.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Braid is, like, one of your best games ever, but it was only, like, what, $15 or something? If it were 60, would you have even ever played it?
Maybe when it dropped to 30 or something.
So no, then.
I would have 60. Still been interested because of the press coverage or the screenshots and such, but I probably would have waited until the price dropped to 30.
But why? Because you didn't wait for... Because didn't you just buy Diablo like full price?
It's a 2D side-scroller.
Why does that matter?
It's
So you're paying per dimension?
Yeah.
So wait, did you pay full price for Diablo?
Yes.
So you paid full price for Diablo, which you probably will not love nearly as much as Braid, which you just now said you would never pay $60 for.
I didn't say never.
Okay, so you would?
I said if...
if it had been $60 when it came out.
If I did not know the experience I was going to have, mm-hmm. and I had not played it and bought it yet, and it launched at $60, I would have waited until the price dropped, and the price would have probably dropped pretty soon to $30.
But is that because you don't think it's worth $60?
No, it's not whether he does now. It's what he would have done in that instance.
So Diablo has like hype and like history, and so you're like, oh, I know I'm gonna get $60 worth of value out of this, so I'll pay $60. But Braid, it's weird. Like two guys made it.
No,
not really sure about it.
No, Diablo had 7 of my friends playing online. Like that's the basic reason I spent that money. I wouldn't have normally. I would have waited till it got cheaper. I would have waited till it had the control scheme I wanted. I was prepared to wait and not buy it. The reason I bought it is because a bunch of my friends were playing online right then, and I wanted to be part of the zeitgeist, you know?
So it's like you're paying
it's not a single. Yep.
But generally speaking, can you imagine paying $60 for an XBLA game?
It's like we went and saw Avengers and overpaid.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. We paid $19 a ticket. And the only reason I would have done that is because we all agreed to go together, right? Normally, there's no way I would have seen the Avengers in the theater, paid any money at all. I would have waited 2 years until I could see it on Netflix for free or borrow somebody's Blu-ray or never watched it at all.
So I guess the question is, have you bought a single-player game?
Cookie Arrival.
Oh, thank you, Robin. Nice. Robin has just brought us deliciousness.
Awesome. Prepare for munching noises.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a game that's single player.
Oh my god, these are good cookies.
Holy shit. That, you know, all right, let's table this discussion and talk about how good these cookies are first. Hold on.
these are oatmeal strawberry filled. Mike's wife is a really good baker. Is there like actor actress for baker?
I think baker is gender neutral.
Okay.
Misogynist.
These are awesome. Oh, my God.
All right. We're taking a short break to nom, 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 nom,
so,
as Cheryl said that one time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So it's the social aspect is what you liked about wanting to do that. But can you imagine a point where? So I'm already at the point where I would be willing to buy every game from a download service as opposed to on a disc. But we're talking more about indie versus AAA, and what does that mean? I mean, functionally, what it means in terms of the
so
marketplace.
Good.
Yeah, they're really good. What it means functionally is, does it have a publisher? Does it have a large scale publisher or not? Or is the publisher the platform, right? Because that's the difference. And for an indie developer, the publisher is the platform. This is going out on XBLA or PSN or both or Steam, and that is my publisher. Whereas a AAA title, you know, this is being developed by, you know, whoever it is, BioWare. The publisher is EA, and the platform is lots of different things, right? It takes a lot more money to do that, but could you see yourself getting to a point where you paid $60 for a game that have equivalent production value, but was just simply published through XBLA?
I would say absolutely that the publisher, the indie versus professional publisher situation is completely arbitrary. It just so happens that it's very difficult for an indie to make a $60 game to get enough upfront capital to develop that. But
so it's really about the content of the game for you.
Yes. And I think this is obvious and demonstrated by the $15 XBLA games made by big studios that are not indies. You know, the value is defined by the length of the game and the quality of the production, the amount of money that went into it. You know, you could spend 2 hours making Avengers, or you could spend 2 hours making an indie. It doesn't have to be indie. You know, a low budget film where it's mostly people talking in a couple of rooms, and you might enjoy that one more, but it's still 2 hours. But you understand why one of them costs a lot more to make. And for movies, you know, we still price those the same. You know, those are both $10 to see or whatever in the theater. But to some people definitely would say, well, I would only see movies like The Avengers in the theaters, and I would definitely wait to see that people talking in a room movie.
Mumblecore.
And wait to see that at home, because the large screen and the big sound system is not relevant and worth paying for.
Yep.
And it just happened that games have worked themselves out to be a similar scenario, but to price themselves dramatically differently. So, you know, a $15 game might still be very long, but, you know, it's 2D overhead. It looks like Final Fantasy I or something, mm-hmm. you know? So it doesn't seem like it's worth $60 today.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm not really sure. I guess I see I agree with what most people think of what indie versus AAA means, and it does have value, and it does. I do have preconceived notions about when I say, "Oh, a new indie game is coming out versus a new AAA game," and content, graphics, whether it has multiplayer or not, whether it's going to have DLC or not, you know, whether it's going to be supported beyond, like, okay, you know, dude in a room made a game and he's done, you know, like. I just wonder if that gap is going to change over time, or if there's always going to be these two camps where they're never going to meet in the middle. Like, there's never going to be like a merging of them where they, you know, there's always going to be dudes in their room, and there's always going to be like publisher backed, you know, major marketing campaign, you know, $60 video games.
And so indie and AAA are basically just labels, and it's what we call those, how we distinguish between those two. And that's what it's useful
right.
for.
I guess, but I don't know. I still don't know about that question about, like, you know, would you pay $60 for Braid? Especially, like, despite what it may look like, who made it, how long it is, like, how much you value it, shouldn't that be what is most important? Not, you know, Skyrim is 100 hours of gameplay. Okay, that's $60.
Well,
Braid, you can beat
but,
in, like, two and
but
2 hours.
There's something implied that comes along with, I mean, you might... like, I fucking loved my Honda S2000. That was the greatest car I've ever owned, but it still has a Honda badge on the front. And even though I probably got as much enjoyment out of it and drove it to, you know, you know, it's closer to its maximum potential than somebody could drive a Ferrari on public roads, you're still not going to pay $300,000 for the Honda, but you would pay it for a Ferrari, right? It's just there, it says something about the content of the car, right? The badge is important.
For a digital product, it doesn't necessarily have the direct correlation of the cost of the materials and the cost of the manufacturing, et cetera. You know, I mean, the budget of the original game is certainly relevant to an extent, but also then just how much fun it is,
yeah,
and how long you want to play it is potentially more relevant. So I think a better example than Braid would be Minecraft, for a total indie game that looks like complete shit, but is now garnering $20. You know, its price is going up over time, not down over time.
Yeah.
Because I paid $8 or something a couple of years ago.
Likewise.
In Alpha or something.
Right.
And it's now $20 on Xbox and sold over a million last week, right?
Right.
Because people know that they're going to get a lot of time out of it, that it's really fun and they're going to play it a while. And so even though it looks indie, it's, you know, budget seems low, and the graphics are not impressive, etc., it still garners that greater value. Now, the reason I don't think it's impossible for an indie to garner 60 at some point is because I do think somebody could make something like Minecraft, but looks a little better and had a few more people working on it and works on it for a little longer, but makes this thing that's really long and addictive, and it also looks a bit more impressive, or has more multiplayer features, or has, you know, more infrastructure supporting it, or whatever, you know, something that seems of increased value, and then nails it at 60. I think the distinction could garner it. It just hasn't happened yet.
Will become more and more gray, particularly in the next generation of consoles, right? Where theoretically everything will be available as a download, and the distinction between what is a box copy retail game and what is a downloadable only game, like when that no longer exists, and like everything is downloadable, but certain things are disc based, right? Then it's going to be much easier for those prices to shift. And I think that'll benefit both sides, because I think that if major developers can get out of the mindset that everything has to be a $60 game, then I think that would lead to a lot better game products, better price competition. Like the fact that everything comes out at 60 but then drops in a week to 40 or whatever, I think that's more damaging than if you had just released the game at 40 to begin with. Yeah, well, you probably would sell more.
Some of the other interesting halfway between cases are like Deadly Premonition, which it would, by any other evaluation, seem like a $60 GTA-like game or something, except that it looked like shit. It looked like it was made like 6-7 years ago.
Right.
But it was developed by a big studio. They just, like, I think they originally planned it for an earlier console, and then it got shelved or pushed back or something. I don't know why it looks exactly the way it looks. So they launched at $19.99,
yeah.
But it looks like a $60 game, kind of, but it looks like a several-year-old shitty-looking one. So,
and it's a cult classic. Like, people really like it.
Yeah, and I liked it. I bought it for a full retail price on release.
Mm-hmm.
Another weird one is Majin and the Forsaken Kingdom or something like that. That one looked like it could have been a 60 Zelda competitor or whatever. It decided to launch at something really weird, like 35 or 40 or 30. I forgot. And neither of those was really successful, but both sold a decent amount. Another example that's super weird is Rayman Origins, which really tried to launch at 60, but it's a 2D side-scroller. Like I said, nobody thought, you know, that a 2D side-scroller was worth $60 anymore.
And yet we did when Super Mario Brothers came out.
Just because.
Even though that was a pack-in, but you know what I mean.
Even I didn't. So I really wanted to play Rayman Origins, but I didn't think I wanted to pay 60. So I waited till it dropped to 30, and then I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, were you done?
Yeah,
basically. I was also thinking two things, that type of thinking of, you know, let's make everything downloadable, that's going to change the pricing scheme. Like, you know, I think that thinking is the kind of thing partly led to like the freemium model, where, you know, we're not going to make you pay an initial investment, but we'll get the whales,
right?
People who are using the service a lot to buy all the items in game,
subsidize
and that will make it up.
Yeah.
And I think that has somewhat of a negative connotation. A lot of people think games that come out some of those games that come out are maybe maligned because they think they're kind of cheap.
I think it's pretty successful. I mean, I think it's successful for a lot of games.
But I'm not sure if those games are held in the same kind of regard as like a Skyrim or a Mass Effect that are like the $60
investments. Well, interestingly, games are changing, right? And TF2 launched as a retail game.
Right.
It was purchasable on Steam. It also launched as part of the Orange Box on 360 and PS3.
NPC.
Okay.
I think.
But now it is a freemium game.
Right.
So, you know, that's... Valve gets to do whatever they want because they own Steam and they can do that stuff. But they, you know, they've just completely shifted the model. And now, where before it was like kind of hardcore... team-based, you know, class-based shooter. Now it's all about like hats and collectibles.
It's hat-based economy.
And, you know, it's got paid user-generated content, and people make money by selling items that they you know, sculpt in 3D software as Steam hats, right?
Well, like in Second Life, doesn't Second Life run that kind of model?
People... Yeah, but they didn't like shift into that, right?
No, but yeah. But the other thing that I thought of is like, I wonder if games could ever go the way that music has gone with the name your own price, you know, the Radiohead model.
Well, that already exists. Like indie bundles, you name your own price.
That's true, but that's for indie bundles. But I mean, could you ever see Mass Effect, you know, 12 being pay your own, name your price? I don't know. Just,
yeah.
Well, the you know, biggest budget album releases that do that are still usually just a couple of folks that worked on it in a studio, you know, and wrote the songs and performed them. In the biggest budget, you know, Mass Effect, for example, hundreds of people worked on for years and years.
And they want to get paid, sure.
Right? So a little harder.
Yeah.
And, you know, MMOs are really interesting in this place right now where they're huge budget, and yet they're all getting this extreme encouragement to move to free-to-play instead of releasing at full retail price and a monthly subscription fee. And everyone is talking as if this is inevitable and all these MMOs, like, it's destined for that to happen, that they can't charge 60 or 15 a month anymore. Everybody's saying that, but I don't think it's accurate at all, because the only cases where that free-to-play model, you know, there's only a few cases where that free-to-play model has worked really well. Lord of the Rings Online, you know, is a good example of when they went free-to-play, they actually started making more money. And Team Fortress 2 is also another example of that. But when Star Wars or Rift or even Terra just now came out, you know, they were all still convinced that if they didn't launch at a $60 price point, they would be giving away money. Mm-hmm. Like, why would they not get the $60 that they could?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then maybe decide to launch or to convert to free to play later after they had made their 60 from all those people.
Yeah.
Right. And it's still for all three of those. Well, you know, one launched 2 weeks ago or whatever, but all three of those are still at getting their paid monthly fees from their users and haven't gone free to play yet. And we'll see if they shift. How, you know, I think Star Wars and Rift were both financially successful, basically. They made enough of their money back, I think. To not be, you know, in the red. So they don't feel forced to go to free. But Terra, I feel probably less so. I don't think they have enough people playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they might be hurting for money, just guessing. Maybe they'll shift just out of necessity.
Cool. All right, last one. Last one is number 15.
Okay, this is not a very interesting one. we can skip it if you guys don't
like
it.
We'll do a one-line opinion.
Yeah.
Okay, so the homogenization of the HUD/UI in games. Like how the UI keeps getting like formed and they all pretty much, especially MMOs, all pretty much use the same UI. Like, no one's trying anything new.
Shooters all use a very similar
shooters
UI.
Flash. Do you even have anything to say about that?
I think that's good. Actually, that's what I've been complaining about. Well, if we broaden it slightly from simply HUD UI,
you can't do that,
to sort of controls in general or standardized, like cars would not work if the gas pedal wasn't always on the right? Like standards are good. We've been talking about, you know, a standardized Dropbox service, or what was the other thing we were talking about with standards recently? We had some other conversation. I don't know. But yeah, so I think that it's useful. I think that it helps to have a, you know, a common grammar between, you know, within a genre of a game.
The first thing that I think of is an MMO and WoW's interface, which obviously was not the first MMO, not the first attempt at making, you know, the perfect MMO interface. But at least for me, because most of my MMO experience is with World of Warcraft, when I look at a random screenshot for, you know, like a second of an MMO and I see, you know, the portrait in the top left and the chat box and the world map and the hot bar at the bottom, I guess it's not really exciting. It almost kind of like immediately kind of, it disengages me just a little bit, because I feel like, oh, that was probably WoW, or, oh, that's not WoW. Wow. That just looks like WoW. You know, like it,
wow.
It kind of like, it's kind of a negative pit for all MMOs that came out after that, just because they have to get over the, yes, I know it looks like WoW, but you should play us instead because we're not WoW. And this could just be me very personally, because I don't play enough MMOs, but I don't know, Josh, you play a lot more. I mean, how do you feel about that?
I kind of agree with Charles to an extent, that a common control scheme or understandable UI that, you know, solely refined over time and kind of copied and improved from game to game in the same genre is certainly helpful for jumping right into new things. I played MMOs before WoW, and yes, WoW basically copied that format from the ones before it. They just refined it and, you know, and then maybe gave more customization options too. They might have been the first one that allowed user written mods and stuff. I don't remember.
Well, that's what I was just going to bring up, that specifically in the context of MMOs, like we're talking about like perfecting or refining the interface, but I think people heavily customize their WoW interface. Like, very few people leave it stock. Like, serious players all have a bunch of mods that...
I modded mine.
Yeah, do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, just to go away from MMOs, because just to... For a different avenue, like, Mass Effect has been, on the other side of the coin, has been criticized. Specifically, there's this one guy who has a couple articles where he basically bashes the Mass Effect UI for doing things that are illogical or infeasible.
I remember
or,
that. For Mass Effect 2.
No, I think he did it for both of them, 1 and 2. I think he did it for all 3, actually. He's written a few articles about this.
I've never seen anyone on 3, but I remember when Mass Effect 2 was out reading that article.
Okay.
And,
But what's interesting, though, is he's specifically bashing them for trying new things, you know, not just sticking with... They could have just stolen the UI from any, you know, like first person or third person, like action adventure kind of thing, but they tried new things, and he basically said that they failed, and it would have been better had they not tried to reinvent the wheel and instead just take WoW's interface, man. It already works. People love it. Why are you doing weird stuff? This is confusing.
Well, I think, as I recall, that specific...
Which I partly agree with. Some of his points about the UI, they did do some weird stuff that was kind of questionable.
It wasn't about necessarily like putting things in a weird part of the screen or whatever. I think he was saying, like, you know, if you're looking at this bar, which is directly above this bar, you know, they move at different rates, right? And that's stupid. Like, one's logarithmic and one isn't, or something like that, right? Like just differences that make it harder to interpret at a glance. Right. And he was, I think his basic point is it's important to have UI designers design UI and not just graphic designers, because a graphic designer will make it look pretty, and maybe a game designer will make it look pretty and look good and fit cohesively with the art direction, but it won't necessarily be good UI, right? Be good user interface.
Yeah, I think that guy was basically complaining about the stylization problems, because the artists had a little more control than the engineers or whatever. But another example of the artists having more control, maybe, but doing it really, really brilliantly, is Dead Space, where the HUD is all built into your suit. There's no game HUD. It's just you know,
projected on the face of the visor through which you're looking.
Kind of Terminator.
You know, coming out of your arm, or it's the green bubbles on the back of your suit. Oh, that's right.
I'm totally, forget what I just said.
That sort of thing.
Yeah,
it wasn't a visor.
But. It wasn't a visor at all. So Dead Space is third person, and your health indicator will be a series of lights that rise up the back of your spine.
Right.
And as you get damaged, it drops down and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I remember the UI elements just sort of get projected into space in front of the character.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like getting projected from his arm or something
from the
like
suit.
That.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Pip Boy in Fallout or something like that.
Yeah.
Except holographic. Right. So that's super cool. You know, I'm a fan of those type of artistic stylizations.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I would think that even a game like that might use some of the conventions, like the whole screen getting red when you're getting too damaged or something like that.
Or
even Terra, you know, an MMO, took that tip from shooters and action games. The whole screen gets red when you're low on health. Sort of situation.
Another one that comes to mind is, you know, a flash of red on the side from which you're getting hit, right? Like red, 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 and then the whole screen is red, right? Yeah.
So would you say in general that games are not that homogenous, or would this like deviation from the standard UI is kind of rare?
I think that they are fairly homogenous, and I think that it's useful, and I think that maybe what we've identified is that if you're going to stray, do a good job.
Yeah, and there's still room for artistic, you know, stylization or room for experimentation, but still following the conventions that are super useful.
Yeah.
And then don't make your stylization, you know, make the indicators impossible to read.
Right.
Or illogical.
Yeah.
So definitely, like, understandability over flair, like, if possible.
Both flares awesome
both if
too.
You can yeah.
right both but if you have to sacrifice one don't sacrifice right. like
well I would say that's hallmark. Absolutely true. If you're gonna sacrifice one, sacrifice all the flair, make it completely functional,
just
totally
a list of numbers
totally
on
ugly
that's it.
And I'm okay with that because I like, you know, numbers.
That is absolutely the hallmark of good design. Like if
well,
you
then
read...
you should like progress quest because that whole application is just scroll bars and numbers.
If you read like Dieter Rahm's 10 principles of good design, it's all about like simplicity, form.
This is why people play Farmville and Tiny Tower and shit like that. It's numbers. Yeah. You know, it's a good UI and you see numbers go up.
So we're at about almost the hour 40 mark.
Yeah. We did our 5 rapid fires.
Yeah. Do we want to do a best game ever or not my thing or anything? Anybody got something they...
No, I don't think so.
Fire in their loins about?
Put it off this week.
Yeah. I think we're good.
Again?
What? No, we did one last week.
I know, but we didn't do one the week before that. So it's the second time we've skipped it.
I'm good.
All right. Had a chance to put another one on the shelf, man.
You've made it through another episode of The Escort Mission. Thank you for listening. We love you. If you would please review us on iTunes, go to our webpage and find us in social media and click through our Amazon link and buy stuff and give us some monies.
Thanks. That's fun, guys.
Thanks. Late.
Late.